Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, Lars, how do you pronounce Mikkel's name?
Mikkel Borg Bjergsø.
Mikkel Bjørg Bjergsø. Yeah. I feel like my brain is like racing today. I will slow it down. I need some like Barry White in here. Okay. Hi. I'm Helen Holliman, and welcome back to our Copenhagen series of Munchies, the podcast. Today, we're talking to the mad genius behind one of Denmark's greatest exports, Mikkeller beer. The word prolific gets thrown around a lot. 10 years ago, in 2006, Mikkel was teaching physics to Danish high schoolers when he started experimenting with homebrewing in his kitchen. He was good at it, like, really good at it. Now, fast forward to 2016, and in that time, he's crafted nearly 1,000 different beers, quickly ascending to his throne as king of the beer nerds. Historically, Denmark has been known for pale, light pilsners. Carlsberg, the one in the green bottle, is probably the best-known example. But Mikkel totally flipped the script on Danish beer and built his reputation on pushing existing styles to their limits. He emphasizes new ingredients, and he takes risks that force us to reimagine what a beer can actually be. He never stops experimenting, and I think that's what makes his products really special. So since I'm here in Copenhagen, I'm catching up with Mikkel over a pint at the Rosengardens Bodega. Equal parts dive and classic English pub. It's what the Danish call a brown bar. The walls here are stained with 100 years of tobacco smoke. And if you looked closely at the walls, you'd actually see some conspicuous small holes. A Nazi snitch was shot dead here in 1944, and a bullet is still stuck in the wall. It's kind of cool and also kind of gnarly, but this bar has serious history. It feels like the right place to meet a brewer who totally changed the course of Copenhagen's beer culture.
Oh, somebody's ringing the bell.
What happens when you ring the bell?
Somebody will be notified that there's a customer at the bar.
It's my kind of service.
Yeah. Let's have another one.
That's Lars Hinnerskov Eriksen, our Munchies Denmark editor.
I used to live in London for many years, and I quite like the fact that people sort of went out after work to the pub for a few hours, and you sort of came home at a reasonable time. Living in Copenhagen, reasonable time is much later here, I find. There's quite a liberal drinking culture, I'd say. You have bars that can pretty much stay open 24 hours, or at least they'll supplement each other. So once the one bar closes at 5, the next one will be opening straight away. And it's not that it turns into complete debauchery in some of these places. It's kind of a nice, like in these, like a bodega that we're sitting in now, you'll normally get a really good mix of, you know, people who obviously come here for years and years, who might not have many other things to do in their daily lives, but to sit in a bodega, and there are, you know, you'll meet politicians, you'll meet actors, you'll meet families. I think that's the energy that I really, and the synergy that I really like about these places. And a lot of students who might not be able to afford going to like a really trendy bar, they'll come to bodegas because they can buy a beer for 20 kroner, for $3. They can play dice, they can relax, I think the locals enjoy that aspect as well. I think you'll find that 9 out of 10 people would order a classic pilsner of the Czech variety, like the classic one that Carlsberg, I suppose, has been making here for years. And I think up until maybe 10, 15 years ago, nobody really questioned that too much. You know, you might get people who brought in a Guinness once in a while, or had, you know, attempts at making a stout or a, you know, Christmas lager that was a bit more rich or something. But then it's just completely changed in the last decade. Beer's become something that people acknowledge as being as worthy as wine for food, and has turned us all into crazy beer snobs.
Well, cheers.
Cheers. Cool. This is good. Yeah. It's very good beer. People actually call me Mikkel. It's kind of funny. And people that don't know, like, that I don't know, and if they meet me, they think my name is Mikkel. I hear that a lot. Even one of my employees' daughters, she thinks that my name is Mikkel.
Well, so how many beers at this point, styles, have you brewed in your life?
I just saw the number today, and there's a website called ratebeer.com, which is a place where people rate beer, and I don't keep track, but they pretty much keep track of everything, because every time we release a new beer, somebody will rate it, somebody will put it into the database, and then it'll rate it. And a lot of those beers obviously are spin-off of, I mean, one cake of something that we made for a festival and stuff like that. But I haven't been on that site for half a year, but I don't know why I did that today, but it said 908 different beers from Mikkel. So that's pretty much somebody like took 908 different beers and put it into the database on Rate Beer. So I guess that's a minimum number. It could be more that somebody didn't see, but we also have some beers we never released that we will release at some point, but yeah, so maybe 950 or something.
And you're in over 40 countries now?
Yeah, 50 maybe. But since 2003, when I started homebrewing, I had been drinking craft beer from Danish and American breweries for a few years, and then I thought in 2003 it would be fun to start homebrewing and just to explore that world. And I did, and it caught on to me really quickly, and I was brewing like the first year pretty much every weekend. I was brewing in my kitchen and tanks, like plastic tanks with fermenting beer everywhere and in my apartment and stuff like that. And then a couple years later, I found that the beers that I brewed in my kitchen turned out really well, at least I thought, and my friend thought. So I thought a couple of years later that it would be fun to try and brew a little more, and then get it out into the world and see if people liked it. Not to create a business. I was a school teacher, but just to get reactions on my beer from people that I didn't know. Because if you give a friend a home brew, obviously he's gonna say it's a good beer, because then he knows more is coming. so it's kind of I thought it would be more fun to get people's reaction from people that I didn't know. So I actually started brewing some of the stuff I did in my kitchen. I started distributing to different places unofficially, and suddenly they turned up in Japan and the US and everywhere, and people rated them on Rate Beer. And got really, really good reviews from stuff that I've made in my kitchen on a 50 liter pot. So in the end of 2005, I thought let's try and make it a little bit bigger. But I was still a school teacher and I loved teaching, so I didn't want to invest. I didn't want to build my own brewery and invest a lot of money. So I thought, there are breweries that have extra capacity. I'll just ask them if I can come and brew my recipes on their system, and they accepted. So I did. So the first official beer I released in the beginning of 2006, only 2,000 bottles of beer, and that was pretty much all my risk, and all I had was those 2,000 bottles that I obviously had to pay for. But I knew that if they didn't sell, I could just keep teaching. And It wasn't a dream to become like to become a brewer and live from and make a living out from brewing and do what I do today. But then, yeah, I got some really good reviews for some of the beers, and everything just went pretty crazy from there.
But what about here in Denmark? What was there much of a critical mass in terms of beer drinkers at that stage? Where it must have been a quite close-knit community of people who were. Who are into these new styles of beer?
From the beginning, I thought I won't concentrate on the Danish market because it's impossible to sell. It's impossible to sell a double IPA, 9% double IPA, very fresh, very hopped, very bitter, in the Danish market. You can sell it at Warpix, our brew pub, or at our bars, but you cannot sell it to the masses. It's impossible. People don't like that style and they don't know it. If you travel outside Copenhagen, I mean, we sell pretty much nothing still. So I thought, well, the world is big. It's 7 billion people. Why not try and conquer the world instead of Denmark? So the first, pretty much, as soon as I had beer ready, I started exporting to the States because of the good rate I got on Rate Beer. We got a lot of interest from the States and a lot of interest from a lot of countries around the world. So it started exporting from day one. And still today, if we don't count our own bars in Denmark, we sell very, very little beer in Denmark. We have a good name now in Denmark, but it's people don't, just because people know Mikkel, it doesn't mean that they buy and drink it. Which is fine. I mean, if they just come to our bar and try it once in a while, then it's fine with me.
So thinking about, I mean, all the countries that you're in, what is a country that has one of the most unusual beer drinking cultures that you've kind of gone into and thought like, oh my God, how are we going to get either in here or something you didn't expect to find there?
I have a bar in Thailand in Bangkok, and when we opened that 3 years ago, obviously, craft beer is not a big thing in Thailand for many reasons. First of all, it's people don't have a lot of money. Second, it's pretty controlled. They have two big breweries that control the market, and importing beer is very expensive. And third, it's a hot country. I mean, who would want to drink an imperial stout in 35 degrees Celsius? So when we moved into Thailand or to Bangkok with our bar, it was completely new. I mean, there was a few craft beer we had been importing for a little while, but very, very small. And it's people just accepted it, and it's going really well out there, and it's just growing right now, which is, of course, is for me extremely interesting to be able to start something in a country, start something from scratch and be one of the first ones. And we have done similar in different countries in Asia.
How would you describe the people that come into that bar in Thailand? Who's your clientele?
I mean, normally in let's say Asia, a place like that would cater a lot to expats, to white people living there and working, which if you go to Hong Kong.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
For example, and going to a craft beer bar, it's pretty much only expats. It's not a lot of locals. But fortunately, and which is what we wanted as well, we got a location in Bangkok, which is it's very non-central and non-touristy. It's a place that you have to search out. You can't. I mean, even taxi drivers, they have no clue where it is when you ask them. It's an area where Thai people go out. Which we did because we wanted Thai people to come to the bar. We didn't. I mean, I don't want a bar in Bangkok and then have only Danish and Swedish people going there. I might as well just do another one in Copenhagen. We also have expats, of course, but we also have a lot of local people that find this new thing interesting, and they want to try experience something new. And this brewery from Western Europe came over and did something, and we talk about it and we pay a lot of attention to it and they like that. So we have young Thai girls coming in groups drinking craft beer for the first time in their life. We also designed it in a way so it caters to more kinds of people than just beer geeks or men with big bellies and lots of money. Obviously, it's expensive compared to, but people, I think people also in Thailand are ready to pay more money for a good experience.
A place in Asia with an interesting beer culture is North Korea.
Oh yeah. We actually, both North and South Korea. South Korea, it's a very, very good market for us. It's exploded this year like crazy. I mean, we started exporting to South Korea 2.5 years ago, and now it's just going completely mad. Korea, there's something about Korea that is really, really strange in a way of how they take Western things in, like pop stars and stuff like that. Obviously, South Korea and North Korea are pretty different. I've never been to North Korea, not yet, but it's a place. For me, it's a very interesting place in terms of being able to. I mean, it's a dream for me to go to North Korea and change something. And when I say change something, it's obviously with beer because that's what I do. I think it's possible. It'll be a different experience. I'm working on it right now, and I mean, if I could do something to the North Korean people that they would enjoy, I would be very happy. I think that would be a great opportunity for me as well to do something that for people that I would never expect to be able to do something for. So my big dream right now is to go to North Korea and make a beer that they have never seen before, and then have people drink it.
But is it more than a dream? Have you actually? Is there any way in that you looked into? Is there a
Yep, I'm working on it right now. It's not going to be easy. It's not like going. I have brewed in at least 30 different countries around the world, and this will definitely be the hardest one to make it happen. But it's something that I want to work on, and I have some good connections right now with people that can make it happen.
Well, I mean, you pioneered Gypsy Brewing. Can you talk about what it's like to go into a brand new country and brew beer with people that you've never met, who have palates that are unlike your palate? You know, how do you go in and try to go in with a plan?
Every time I brew with somebody that I haven't brewed with before, the first thing I do is always to taste the beers that they're brewing, because it's important for me to know, first of all, how skilled are they, obviously, and also what style of beers do they usually produce. And when I've done that, I mean, every brew I do with somebody else, for me it's important that I learn from them and they learn from me. I don't just brew with people just because then I can put their name on the label and that's it. So it's to learn from them and hopefully they'll learn from me as well. So we communicate a lot about recipes, and we communicate a lot about local ingredients, local culture. Like recently I brewed a beer in Israel for the first time with a very good and very nice brewer in Israel. We made a beer which will be something that will be different from what have ever been brewed in Israel before. But we brewed it with respect to Israeli culture and ingredients. So we used ingredients from Israel and his knowledge in the market and stuff like that. So I learned a lot from that, and I hope he learned a lot from me as well.
So, I mean, walk me through, you land, where were you in Israel?
I actually stayed in Israel for 6 weeks.
Okay.
In Jerusalem. In May and June this year with my family, and not to work. I did work down there, but not to brew. And then I got in contact with this guy, this brewer. I've heard about him but never met him before, and then he contacted me and said, do you want to come see my brewery? And I did, and tasted his beers, and we ended up brewing a little bit north of Tel Aviv. It was fun. It's a very different approach to when I brew in the States, so in Western Europe. But it's also, I mean, it's interesting because I feel that I can contribute with something completely new. We brewed, and actually, as it's a stout, It's a milk stout lactose, which makes it not kosher. I'm sorry. But with lactose, honey, and oranges. Israel, you call it the land of milk and honey. So I wanted to use lactose milk and then honey, local honey. And then oranges, because there's a lot of oranges in Israel. And the beer is a lot, it's strong, it's powerful, it's viscous, and it's just very different from what you normally drink. It's very hot in Israel, so they don't have a lot of those high alcohol strong beers. But I think it turned out excellent, and I'm pretty sure people will love it down there. At least a little group of people.
Like, how would you describe the beer geek today?
We have, or I have, a love-hate relationship with beer geeks. They are very important for when spreading the word of somebody like me in the beginning. As I said, we got a lot of attention from all over the world because of Raid Beer, and Raid Beer are completely beer geek oriented. It's only for beer geeks. The more rating, I mean, there are people on Raid Beer that rate 40,000 different beers. It's pretty beer geeky. So obviously I love them for that, for liking my beers and spreading the word and talking about it and stuff like that. But they also in some ways are holding things down, because they care a lot about, I mean, as soon as you, and it's like probably like that in all areas of the world of life, but as soon as you don't only concentrate on making them happy, you have become big and commercial, and then they tend to like you less. I mean, I'm sure that beforehand, if somebody, like in the beginning, if a Danish beer geek tasted one of my beers, he would probably rate it a little bit higher, because he was proud that this is from Denmark. While I think it's the opposite now, because those Mikkeller guys, they're so big now, and everybody, you can buy it everywhere and stuff like that. And beer geeks are pretty hardcore. I mean, if something new turns up, they just go to the new guys. I mean, if a new brewery turns up next door and you've become a little bit too big, they just go to the next ones. Not saying, I think we still have a good hold on that world, because we keep developing and we keep inventing new things and we keep making interesting beer. I mean, the beers that I do today are at least as interesting, extreme, bold as they were 10 years ago. Beer geeks would say different, because now we are a lot bigger and we make 100 times more beer, but there is no different. I concentrate as much on quality, as much on developing new things, and on being first in everything I do. So I would say the most interesting and most strange one, funny one, it was obviously in Japan, which doesn't surprise anybody. And you can't, I wouldn't call this person, this girl, a beer geek, but she obviously liked beer a lot. She was crying like crazy because in front of me, because pretty much what she said is, I love your beer so much. And she just couldn't stop crying, and her friends was just, they were like, oh, it's okay. But she just kept crying and hugging me and stuff like that, which is something you would expect being a rock or like a pop star, but not as a brewer from Denmark. We have actually there are two people, one in Canada and one in Singapore, I think it is, that named their kids Mikkeller. There's a Canadian boy called Mikkeller, and there's a boy in Singapore called Mikkeller. It's not creepy. It's a big honor, obviously, but it's also strange. It's.
Do you think they were conceived by your beverages, or?
Probably. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I guess. It's strange. I mean, it's also strange to see a picture of somebody who just gave birth and are in the hospital bed with a one hour old daughter or son, and then sitting there with a Mikkeller beer. I'm celebrating with this beer. It's a big honor, obviously, but there's a lot of things that I would not have expected 10 years ago.
Thank you so much to Mikkel for getting a drink with us and sharing beer wisdom. And I'm really sorry that I've been butchering your name this entire episode. His products are available in over 40 countries now, so chances are you'll actually be able to get a taste if you haven't done so already. Thanks so much to Lars Hinnerskoff Eriksson, our Munchies Denmark editor, and to Phil Domachowski, our amazing podcast producer. On the next episode of Munchies the Podcast...
Snake meat is much better.
Yeah.
I have tried a lot. But, I mean, when you go there, you have to try. So I mean, some of the most crazy thing I have tried is actually in Vietnam when I was young.
Check back in 2 weeks when we'll continue our Copenhagen Chronicle with Denmark's Queen of Vietnamese Food, An Lee. So until then, get all of our delicious Munchies content over at munchies.tv. Hit us up at Munchies on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook too. And if you like the show, show us some love by rating it on iTunes. It actually really, really does help us out, believe it or not. I'm Helen Holliman. I'll catch y'all soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.